double take, critical, sometimes confrontational, but always amusing conversations about movies. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production produced by John DeSando.
I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Wayne Miller.
And this is Double Take.
It is.
Talk about the definition of classic. Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
I mean...
Yeah. How many... We've had
countless.
More people... Yeah. We would spend not only this program, but several others, just a basic list of the number of people played by... who've played Sherlock Holmes.
So let's... So let's hold off, try to restrain ourselves,
yep.
And talk about Enola Holmes 2,
yes.
And then we can drift into just the whole Sherlock Holmes oeuvre as we get toward Double Take.
Double Take, right? Yep.
So let's start out Enola Holmes 2. Gee, I wonder what that's about.
Well... with the two there, I suppose it's not about, like, she's got a twin. No, this is a sequel to a Netflix movie, Enola Holmes, that kind of sets up the whole premise, her being Sherlock Holmes' younger brother. I didn't see
How about younger sister?
I'm sorry, younger sister, right. that was a faux pas. And it was well-received. You know, the first movie. And in that one, her mother, who's also is a great support in this movie, played by Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, yes, true.
And in the first movie, mom comes up missing, and Nola decides to use some of her deductive skills that her mom has taught her. But her mom also taught her a lot of martial arts skills, too.
And we get a bit of jujitsu in Enola.
Yes, and
Holmes
she
too.
Even says something, you know, as she kind of a standoff with these people and says, "I know jujitsu," but engagingly played by Millie
Bobby Brown.
Bobby Brown, right. Millie Bobby Brown.
And this is saying something considering that she's playing opposite Henry Cavill as Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes. And,
who
else? Well, and there's a number of other good supporting people there. David Tulis is a Scotland Yard inspector.
Yes, Grail.
Yes.
I wonder what that says.
Her friend, was it Edith? That the black woman?
Yeah, Susan Wacoma.
Who does a great job. So there's a number of great supporting.
And we have other characters occurring now, including one of my old favorites, Lestrade.
Oh, yes, yes. A very good Lestrade in this one.
Which Adele Ekdahl, I think.
Yeah.
Adele.
And this is what I really liked about this movie, it was a lot of fun to watch. Great. And I always have been intrigued by Victorian London.
Yeah.
That, from what I hear, was not all that much fun to live in. with a lack of sanitation and everything else. But, and I've always been intrigued by such things as the Jack the Ripper case and of course all the Holmes stories. But here, she fits in quite well. And what I'm always intrigued with is when she breaks down what we call in the theater the fourth wall.
Yeah.
And talks with the audience.
Yeah, I think it's a nice touch.
Yeah.
And she is, let me get the word out, spunky.
Yeah. Very, very spunky.
And she's not classically beautiful. She's just, she has a soul that shines out through her lovely complexion, face, the way she carries herself.
Yeah.
Everything is very nicely done, almost understated. But then, you know, I mentioned him before, but Henry Cavill understates his role.
Very much so. And in a review that I was reading, they stated because of his classically handsome looks that he's more like a Jane Austen hero.
He is, yes.
Than
that's a good point.
Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I think he does a good job in this one. And this is kind of a younger Sherlock Holmes, pre him meeting Watson and sharing a flat.
And this is the one, the Sherlock Holmes you've always told me about, the drunken Sherlock Holmes. And they really play that up in this one.
Yeah, that he, but, and I was wondering if he was doing it as a ruse, you know, kind of as part of trying to go incognito or whatever, because he was a master of disguise. And if this was a disguise, but it wasn't, that he'd gone and you know, really.
What did you tell me that he, did he snort cocaine?
Actually mainlined it. And that he called a 7% solution.
That's right.
Which, of course, then became not a part of the canon, as they call it, you know, the Conan Doyle's written works, but Nicholas Meyer actually wrote the book. The 7% solution, and it was made in a very interesting movie with Nicole Williamson playing Holmes. Back to Little Sis,
Enola Holmes 2.
Yes, and some of how this movie was made I thought was very interesting, John. Not only great set design and production, but also editing, and it kind of reminded me somewhat two different things. One, the Sherlock Holmes, the two movies with Robert Downey Jr., where you see in slow motion as he's thinking about how
to
throw fisticuffs and throw people around. But also the Sherlock series with Benedict Cumberbatch, because during those shows that Holmes would kind of explain how he came to a deduction of from the evidence.
Right, right.
And you see that and how that was worked in with the evidence. Also, this had, I think, a really Monty Python take to it with some of the very humorous little things they put in, like little talking animated characters. And, you know,
and isn't there an awful lot of cutting, montaging in this?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, and a lot of stuff. Even a very cute little scene that looked like a family portrait of Sherlock, Brother Mycroft, and Enola, and their mother.
The underachieving Mycroft.
Yeah.
He's the one sibling doesn't quite
pay. Well, and we could go into this a little bit more with
later
Double Take.
Yeah, but, we will.
About Mycroft.
Let's attend just for a minute to the matchstick business, because I was intrigued that this is an historical occurrence in the late 19th century.
Yes. A strike of these matchstick girls.
Oh, is that an intended pun?
Matchstick? No, not quite. It does remind me of the little famous Christmas poem about the little matchstick girl out on the street, you know, trying to sell her matches, freezing to death, and dreaming of being in a little, in a place with a nice fire and plenty of food.
But anyway, they did. They had a strike.
Yeah,
and it was real.
Right.
And in a factory, and this is, she doesn't know what she's getting into when she takes on.
Right.
She needs this assignment.
Well, and. And the plot, as it goes on, and it's one of those things you really have to kind of pay attention to, because it was a labyrinth of plot lines, including basically Enola's on the case because she's helping this little girl try to find her sister and come up missing.
And the sister gets involved in the factory work.
Yeah, and she's one of the hundreds of matchstick girls, you know, working in this factory. And she, and so Enola kind of sneaks in, starts coming up with evidence. Lo and behold, some of it is related to a case that Brother Sherlock is working on.
How convenient.
How convenient. And of course, it's not only about these matchstick girls dying of what they were saying was typhus, but also the owners of the factory, how they were hooked in with cabinet members, British Parliament cabinet members, stealing funds, you know, from all these banks and everything.
That infamous rival of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yes, his nemesis, Moriarty.
Yeah.
And we won't give it away.
No.
But a very interesting take on Moriarty that I hadn't seen before.
Right.
There have been female Moriartys I've seen in sometimes.
Well, I like Enola Holmes 2 because it has a big burden to overcome. which is Sherlock himself.
Yes.
And to make it believable, I think they do, was it Harry Bradbeer is the director, and he directed the first Enola.
Yeah.
And I think they did a great job of overcoming the baggage that you bring when you do something with Sherlock.
Especially when you make Sherlock a supporting character.
Yes.
And the main person here, who fortunately is very engaging, is Enola.
But you know, so that may answer our question initially, that Cavill probably underplayed that specifically. So that to take the heat off of him, his character, and let it shine on her.
And he's having quite a career right now, with Superman going to be resurrected. And of course, he was in the first Enola Holmes movie as Sherlock.
Yeah. So overall, we could say that this is a Netflix movie, which means it's not going to cost you much to take a look at it. What do you advise?
I would advise to see it, but I tell you to do so, to be aware, one of the things when you're filming in Victorian age London, there's not a lot of lighting. And I noticed in your review, and we saw it together on Netflix, and we both, it's so annoying when you can hardly see what's going on at the night scenes.
Yes.
And very annoying.
Yeah.
And so that's the only drawback that I would have with this.
Yes, and I don't think it was the quality of our vision here on my set, because that's been universally true. These dark, mysterious movies get, when they're put on our TVs.
On TVs. And so I wonder what it would look like in a darkened theater auditorium on the big screen.
Yeah, I think it would be better. All right. Enola Holmes 2.
Right.
Netflix.
Netflix. I recommend it. Yep. The case, as she said at one time, the case has feet. Instead of the case as a foot.
Enola Holmes 2 is a young adult adaptation.
Right.
But you and I, being somewhat young adultish in our old age.
Really.
Some would call our dotish.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Let's slip over to what you and I have always been fascinated by over the years. Sherlock Holmes himself.
Yes.
And I'll just open up, because I know you got so much to say, that I noted that The Dying Detective in 1921 was the first silent of Sherlock Holmes, starring Al Norwood as Sherlock, and Hubert Willis as Dr. John Watson.
Yeah.
Then he's the one who he is allegedly the most prolific actor to play
him. Yeah. A lot of people really liked him in the role. There was some earlier than that, silent shorts
Shorts,
and stuff, but I think that was the very first feature-length one, and also a Sherlock Holmes movie, an American one, silent, with the famous profile himself, John Barrymore.
Yes,
playing Holmes.
Interesting trivia that the servant is named Bar. They had him originally as Barrymore, but then when John Barrymore became way too popular, the Barrymores, they had to change him to Barrymore.
There is a character in Hound of the Baskervilles actually named Barrymore. But anyhow, I alluded earlier to how some of the filming of this reminded me, especially of the slow motion, type stuff, the fight scenes or whatever that you could see, or Holmes deducing by little evidence, by observation, in slow motion, so you could see how he did it, both fighting as well.
This is
as
Downey Jr.'s particular way,
Which, and I'm kind of surprised. The second one did not do quite as well, and that's why that franchise, because they were really wanting to build up a franchise with Downey as Sherlock Holmes, but that has not stopped, a number of, particularly on TV. Benedict Cumberbatch, and this is what's interesting too, John, because I'd seen all those episodes on PBS. It was a British production, Sherlock with Cumberbatch as Holmes. And of course, his brother Mycroft's in it quite a bit, older brother. And Mycroft himself is an interesting character, and there's been books, kind of like with Enola, there's been some books dedicated to him where Brother Sherlock was a minor character. But yeah, Mycroft had a job. Holmes even admitted that his brother was more astute than he was, but he was lazier. And not so much lazy as far as not working or being a bum, that he had an important position with the British government. In fact, Holmes had stated in one of the books that Mycroft is the British government. That any his role was anything that was coming up, they would bring to Mycroft to sniff through it. Any treaties or problems abroad with the empire, you know, and all that other stuff.
Well, as we move, as we move into Basil Rathbone and others, I just wanted to point out another interesting tidbit here that the Elementary, my dear Watson, never appears in Conan Doyle.
No, it doesn't. And I think it was the Rathbone.
No, it was the first, 1929, it was the first sound. It was okay. Norwood again, I think.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Probably, because he...
I'm sorry, you're right. Clive Brook,
yes.
Yeah, so 29. I just found that fascinating.
Yeah.
And then how many iterations of The Hound of the Baskervilles?
Oh, my God.
Which is my favorite.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, you know, the Rathbone, but also Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
Did a great job for Hammer Productions.
Yes.
In the late 50s of The Hound of the Baskerville.
And interesting that they wouldn't continue a series because it didn't do well. Apparently because people couldn't accept a Hammer film without gore.
Yes, and this one did have a little bit more gore than in a lot of the Holmes movies. But another memorable Sherlock Holmes was Christopher Lee.
Yes.
Who was really born... something about... Because Cushing made a number of British TV episodes of Sherlock Holmes. But I think probably Christopher Lee really kind of fits some of the description of Holmes being tall, angular, but also somebody that you would not want to mess with. And, of course, Lee at the time, so famous for a number from Frankenstein Monster, The Mummy, to Dracula, and a number, great number of movies with Peter Cushing.
Well, I know there are 14 Basil Rathbone, and that's the one that I grew up on.
Everybody did, right? Yeah. And the first two, Hound of the Baskervilles and The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, both made about 1939 for, I believe, 20th Century Fox, and they did not want to continue the series, and it was like about 2-3 years later, Universal picked it up. And so that, and they updated it to modern times, and in several of the movies, Rathbone as Holmes and Nigel Bruce as Watson, they were battling Nazi spies and things like that.
I do remember you're turning me towards somebody who I thought gave Basil Rathbone a real run for his money, and that was Jeremy Brett.
Jeremy Brett, yes. In the series we could see here in the U.S. on PBS, and I believe it was, wasn't BBC, it was another studio. Yeah. Television production over there, and they did several feature length Holmes stories besides the hour long TV episodes, and of course one of those that they did feature length was Hound of the Baskervilles, and I think Brett was an excellent Holmes. Also, though, very ably supported by two different actors. David Burke and Edward Hardwick, who played Watson.
Mm-hmm.
And this was my one thing that I did not like about the Rathbone Holmes and the bumbling, buffoonish Nigel Bruce as Watson.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Two Watsons for Brett's Holmes both were very, very good. And kind of showed, you know, even though he wasn't as quick-witted as Holmes, but this is a guy who was a war hero in Afghanistan for the British Army, was an army surgeon, was a doctor. He was by no means a dummy, nor buffoonish. I mean, you know, he was kind of a heroic figure on his own.
Yeah, you know, and going back to our cinema classics discussion, and you had mentioned this, we had questioned the drunken Sherlock Holmes and Enola Holmes, too. So here may be an answer to our problem. Yeah. This is, without a clue, in 1988, a drunken Sherlock Holmes is really just a cover for the real detective, Dr. Watson.
Yeah.
See, wow.
Oh God.
Michael Caine.
Yes, Michael Caine, and I think Ben Kingsley.
Yes, exactly.
Played what? That, and Michael Caine was basically just for show, you know, almost, and it was kind of picked up later on by a TV series called Remington Steele, that a female detective needed kind of somebody to be the male detective.
Yes,
that,
yes.
You know, that, but
in 2015, I think you and I were disappointed. Ian McKellen as an older Holmes.
Yeah, that one was. Yeah, that was. That was a bit different.
Yeah.
And, of course, there have been so many renditions of Holmes.
Yeah.
And one that was a pretty decent movie was Young Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
And a young guy that Nicholas, God, something, that I don't remember seeing him in anything else, but it was the school days when Holmes supposedly met Watson when they were school kids, which, of course, in the canon, Holmes meets Watson when, through a mutual friend, they decided to share an apartment, a flat, okay, in London together. One thing I do want to say, though, this is not the first time that Enola Holmes, too, was not the first time that we see a younger sister of Holmes, because in near the end of the run of Benedict Cumberbatch as Holmes, that he did have supposedly this younger sister. And a lot of people who have seen the Cumberbatch one remember she was kind of the villain in that.
Well, you know, you're reminding me that, and I've forgotten what sparked me recently, but I was thinking about his, Sherlock Holmes's, love interests, and the only one I know of is Irene Adler, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And that never materialized, or
no? It was explored in the 7% Solution.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, somewhat. Definitely explored in the Cumberbatch series.
Yes.
The Irene, and that they had even a physical relationship, and more long term than just knowing each other, you know, for just a few days. But also it was a good continuing arc in the TV series who did a very good job, Johnny Lee Miller.
Oh yes, yeah, right.
Elementary.
Yeah,
with an Asian female Watson played by Lucy Liu, who did an excellent job.
In 1971, I'm thinking about how this Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes just seems to magnetize so many different people. George C. Scott and Joanne Woodward.
Yes.
Two heavyweight actors.
They might be giants or
yes,
something
exactly.
Like that. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah. And, of course, in this case, and it was updated, it was in New York City, and Scott plays a guy who was mentally ill.
That's right.
Who thought he was
right.
Holmes.
That's right. Yeah. So it's not really him. Okay.
Well,
one thing. Wait.
Now, do you think we've bantered enough?
No, I need to have one anecdote for our audience.
Okay.
For that listener who really cares about what we talk about.
Okay.
There was one time years ago when I made a long distance call from Switzerland.
Yes, 3 a.m. And I answer, you know, kind of like still in a haze, and I answer the phone, and all I could hear is this shouting on the line. And I thought, okay, this is DeSando, and he's talking about a Russian boxcar. No, you were talking about
what was it? The
Reichenbach Falls.
Falls, from which supposedly Holmes and Moriarty had plummeted.
In Switzerland.
Yes, in Switzerland.
Conan Doyle wanted to kill off Holmes in a writing about him. So he supposedly died. Well, then it was such a clamor to bring him back years later. He did bring him back, and that it wasn't Holmes that died falling over the falls. It was Moriarty, and Holmes went into hiding because of Moriarty's henchmen.
Well, so many things are a test of friendship, and our best friendship was tested because my companion, Clay Lowe, refused to go any farther, hike up after the funicular or whatever it was that took us up the mountain.
And I still have, you gave me a really cool little button with a Sherlock Holmes profile on it from the, not the Russian boxcars, but the Reichenbach Falls.
So anyway, for our audience, just go Google it. And yes, you'll see scores of Sherlock Holmes films.
So many books, so many things, yes.
Great, great! It's a great stuff. It's great motion picture.
Yes, it's really interesting.
We've named some of the ones, and there'll be other favorites for people. But I think that does it for Sherlock Holmes.
The case is a tootsie or whatever you would say. A foot. A case is a foot.